7. I can't resist the joyous urge to smile and say thank heaven for little girls.
This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry, and this hour, Thank Heaven for Little Girls, a look at a program in Texas for keeping the wide-eyed dreams of young people, especially girls, alive, so that they could be killer app entrepreneurs by the time they grow up. Also, we'll have a look at some very big financial returns in a business where you never hear the words killer app, but you do hear the words double wide a lot. We'll explain later this hour. Also, a conversation about the pain and tragedy in South Korea in the wake of the ferry disaster and the rescue efforts that are continuing. But we begin with diplomacy. After weeks of confrontations, annexations, and outraged rhetoric in the UN Security Council over the crisis between Russia and Ukraine, four-way negotiations are underway in Geneva today. Officials from the United States, Russia, Ukraine, and the European Union. They're the first talks between the four parties since the political crisis began. The talks take place as a Ukrainian military mission to repulse pro-Kremlin militants in eastern Ukraine has apparently stalled amidst casualties, including the reported death of three pro-Russian protesters. Also part of the backdrop to these talks, Russian troops have been mobilized on the Ukrainian border in recent days. Joining me now, Edward Lucas, senior editor at The Economist and author of The New Cold War. Welcome, Ed.
Hello, John.
So let's begin with what Russian President Vladimir Putin said on television today. He has the authority to deploy military force in the conflict if needed. He referred to the eastern part of Ukraine as, quote, New Russia, and made this comment. Only God knows, he said, why it became a part of Ukraine. Is he speaking only to a domestic audience there, or is that message going to make its way to Geneva?
This is clearly not a message for a domestic audience alone. Certainly Russians are thrilled by what's going on in Ukraine. They feel this is the end of a period of humiliation that started with the collapse of the Soviet Union. And the Kremlin propaganda machine has quite successfully stoked a kind of nationalist frenzy inside Russia, where the people who run Ukraine are portrayed as fascists and nationalists and so on, which is really quite unfair. And it's all portrayed as part of a Western plot. But I think that the really significant thing to me was this use of Novorossiya, New Russia, which is an old colonial era term from the time when these lands were first conquered by the Tsarist Empire. And that isn't just eastern Ukraine. That stretches along the south coast past Odessa, right up to part of Moldova, the province of Transnistria. And so I find that very sinister. And I also find sinister the way in which he says that Russia has a right to go into Ukraine if it wants. Countries don't have rights to go into other countries' territory unless they have a Security Council resolution or unless there's some grave humanitarian catastrophe or emergency, and that's not happening. But Mr. Putin is doing his best to make it happen.
He seems to have been successful, though, in portraying that Russia has a much higher stake in the outcome here than the EU or the United States. I mean, he's mobilized troops. He's got the hearts and minds of the Russians behind him. And the West answers this with some sanctions. And, you know, there's no appetite for a military confrontation with Russia as far as the American domestic audience is concerned. He's called the bluff here, Putin has.
Yes, I think he has, at least in this round. And I think that it's absolutely preposterous for anyone to maintain that Russia actually cares about these Russians, these ethnic Russians in other countries. He's shown no interest in them over the 15 years he's been in power, except as a kind of stage army, which he can call on as an example of grievance and oppression. But there's no real sympathy or sentiment for them. But I think you're absolutely right, John, that he sees weakness. He sees a gap between deeds and words in the West, that we talk about a rule-based international order and about the importance of maintaining countries' sovereignty and borders and so on, but we are not willing to accept economic pain and we're not willing to threaten the use of force. And so long as we are not willing to do either of those, and he's willing to do both of them, he's got the upper hand and he's calling our bluff in a way that I find terrifying. I think we're heading for a really unpleasant confrontation.
Speaking with Edward Lucas, senior editor at The Economist, author of The New Cold War, is the new Cold War essentially dealing with what could happen over the next year or so, and that is economically what remains of Ukraine that's not pro-Russian will become more economically dependent upon Europe, and the EU will, and the United States will simply have to bail out this economic basket case on the eastern border.
I think you can't really bail something out if it's completely leaking and waterlogged, and the danger we're going to have is of a rump Ukraine, maybe landlocked, deprived of its eastern and southern regions, its heavy industry, which will be a very embittered and not really functional state. And that will be a problem, I suspect, chiefly for the European Union, although clearly the United States will have an interest in it as well. But on this business of the new Cold War, I actually coined the term back in 2007 and wrote a book then called The New Cold War Warning, that exactly this was going to happen, that Russia's economic influence in the West was going up, that its desire to meddle in its neighbours was unabated, and that sooner or later we were going to find we wanted to push back hard against Russia, and we were unable to do it because the economic pain would be too great. And I'm now, as you say, reissuing that book with a kind of I told you so introduction, because I'm afraid exactly what I gave warning of has actually come to pass. We are in a really difficult position here, and the whole post-war security order, which has made us here in Europe and you in America and everyone else feeling more or less safe and free, is being challenged by what's essentially a rogue state that has no interest in this post-war order and thinks it's totally unfair.
I'm dying to ask you this. We've asked a lot of historians over the past several weeks and months if, beyond the Cold War, if this is a new 1914 in the sense that you've got a potential for a refugee crisis in Ukraine, the population's on the move, annexations, just like the Austrian annexation of Bosnia-Herzegovina, which raises the tensions in the region. This is 1914 all over again as well in some terrifying way.
Yes, I think you're right. And there are elements of 1914 and of all the miscalculations that were involved there. And you've also got elements of the late 1930s with this, as it were, the Anschluss of Crimea, which recalls the Anschluss of Austria, very popular among Austrians, very popular among Crimeans now. And this idea of the gathering of the Russian lands, to use a very sinister phrase the Kremlin uses, which is rather like Hitler's approach to the ethnic Germans who were the Volksdeutsch, who were left outside Germany's borders by the Treaty of Versailles. And then you've also got the kind of ideological competition of the Cold War, Mr. Putin very clearly now articulating a different version of civilization based on autocracy, the Orthodox Church, Russia's sort of historical destiny, something that I think Western commentators are rather underestimated. They assume that because Russia was capitalist, it was basically like us. Well, no, it isn't. And Putin is exactly showing that now. So we have three different historical precedents all combined. And boy, do we not know how to deal with it.
Well, I suppose it's tempting to look at this in apocalyptic, 1914 terms, Cold War terms. But let's take the other view. I mean, what can be accomplished at these talks? I mean, there is a chance that this could be a constructive attempt to really resolve this crisis. What do you think?
Well, John, I just disagree with that. I think Russia's very good at using diplomatic process as a way of tying us up in knots, because we are basically kind of very reasonable people. And if we have a problem and someone says, well, let's talk about this, we're inclined to think, well, that must be a good thing. But in Russia's case, it's not. If you look back at the way Russia does these things, they use talks as a kind of distraction, as a kind of camouflage while they create facts on the ground. And that's what they're doing right now. So my expectations of these talks are extremely modest. I think now's the time for us to be putting very tough sanctions on Russia, which the United States has done a good job, but only an initial good job. And there's a lot more we can do. We should be putting visa bans on. We should be freezing assets. We should be launching money laundering investigations. And we should be trying to cut off Russian energy companies' access to the world financial system and really raising the cost of doing business, Mr. Putin. Because at the moment, he just does not think we're serious. And so long as he thinks that, he's going to continue. And that's when we get the apocalypse, because my great fear is that he tries something in the Baltic states. And then very late in the day, we try and stop him. And we then have a choice between either the end of NATO or risking World War III. And that's a choice I'd much rather we never have to face.
Well, Edward Lucas, I tried to go optimistic on you, but boy, that was pretty futile there. You meet my pessimism with apocalyptic language. What levers does Putin have if the U.S. does, as you suggest, and the West does, as you suggest, raise the pain level for Moscow?
Well, he can do a number of things. He can withdraw cooperation on Afghanistan, but that's not great for him because he doesn't want the Taliban to win in Afghanistan. He can do more saber-rattling. He put his nuclear forces on alert. He can spook our populations by saying, do you really want to, are you really willing to die for Kiev? Are you really willing to risk nuclear obliteration for the eastern Estonian town of Narva? He can apply economic pressure to Europe. Now, in the very short term, Europe's got plenty of natural gas, and so they're in pretty good position. It was a mild winter. We've got plenty in store. As next winter approaches, Europe becomes more and more dependent on Russian imports. So that's one pressure point he's got.
Edward Lucas is the senior editor at The Economist. His book, The New Cold War, is being reissued with a new introduction. Do the words "I told you so" actually appear in that introduction, Edward?
I was very tempted, but I think it's better for other people to say that.
Thank you for that. Edward Lucas, thanks so much.
Bye-bye. It was a pleasure being on the program.